e-commerce traffic analysis. So when I talk about e-commerce traffic analysis, what do I talk about? The average handling time, which is total handling time. That means the total time I've handled the customer divided by the number of customer inquiries that I've got in that time frame. Refund or return rate, number of returned or refunded orders divided by the total number of orders into 100. I want to know how many people are actually refunding or returning the custom products that they have bought. Back order rate, number of back order items divided by the total number of ordered items into 100. So by back order items, I mean certain items which are not in stock and they have been ordered. So how many such items have been ordered out of the total orders that I have? Order accuracy, number of accurate orders divided by the total number of orders into 100. That what is the accuracy of each and every order? Or have I made any errors in the orders that have been sent across? Then we have order cycle time, which is time taken for an order to be processed, packaged, shipped and delivered. That means when websites tell you that it will deliver in so and so days, because they have monitored how much time it takes for the processing, packaging, shipping to be done. It also depends when you have ordered. That's the reason sometimes most of the times we come across a term which talks about working days. Inventory turnover is the average inventory value divided by the total sales revenue. How much, what is the average value of my inventory and what are the sales I have done for that? Inventory to sales ratio, average inventory value divided by the total sales revenue. Traffic analysis in e-commerce refers to the process of examining the sources, behavior and patterns of visitors to the online store or website. Now again, let's talk about the sources of traffic in detail. So first we have organic traffic, visitors who visit your site through search engines. I basically, like it says over here, Googled best running shoes, and I sell running shoes, so my website popped up through Google. That is basically an organic search. So most of the time we hunt for various products on Google, and if we click on an e-commerce website and go there, that becomes an organic traffic. Then direct traffic. So even if you see when it comes to that Google search, you will see the addresses very, when it redirects you to that particular business, the address contains the information that this has come from the Google page, so that I can clearly differentiate between all of them. Then I have direct traffic. What is that? Visitors who directly type your website URL into their browser. Example, a customer books your website and visits it regularly. Or if I have to just go to Amazon, just type amazon.in and go to the website, that is direct traffic. I don't need to use a Google search for that. Referral traffic. Customers who come from external websites or platform. Example, a fashion blogs your store in a product review post. Or you right now have a lot of people where you write blog post and you basically direct traffic to the blog post. Or from the Instagram page of an influencer. So all that comes in referral traffic. Paid traffic. Customers acquired through paid advertising campaigns, such as clicking on a sponsored ad for electronics or on a social media. Any sponsored ad or any ad that you see and you click through that is paid traffic. Understand? When it comes to all these different four sources of traffic, I should have clear markers and indicators that would help me differentiate where is the source of traffic coming from. So now let's look at traffic behavior analysis. What is traffic behavior analysis? Page views. What is total number of pages viewed by visitors? Bounce rate. The percentage of visitors who leave after viewing only one page. So this is mainly happens when you are redirecting to your website, and whatever website page, mostly it's a welcome page that pops up. You open that page and it basically, after that, the user just closes the page and does not interact on the website as a whole. Average session duration, the average time users spend on your website, on your site, and exit pages, the pages where visitors are most likely to leave your website. So that is, it could be the cart page, it could be the checkout page, whatever page that might be. Then we have something called as traffic segmentation. What do we look at over there? Geographic segmentation. So what do I analyze traffic by? Location, country, city, and basically then I can basically do, so based on the geographic location, and then I basically make my marketing efforts as per that. Then I have demographic segmentation, which is age, gender, whatever demographic factors come, and I then use that to do my marketing. Then I have device segmentation, differentiating between traffic from desktop, mobile, and tablet devices. Where exactly is my traffic coming from? And is there, even in the traffic segmentation, it can tell me, is there people from a particular device that are dropping out more frequently than the rest? E-commerce conversion and funnel analysis. So what is that? Conversion funnel analysis in e-commerce involves examining the sequence of steps that users take from initially engaging with the online store to completing a desired action, such as making a purchase. It helps businesses understand customer behavior, identify bottlenecks, and optimize the user experience to improve conversion rates. So where did I first start from? Maybe I checked a influencer page and I went onto the website. Then what did I do next? Did I click on the product? Did I see different types of products that are there on the website? Did I close the page? What did I do? After that, was there a particular series of products that I added to the cart? What changes did I make to the cart? What were the final products in my cart? And finally, what was the checkout? Did I check out, not check out? And where exactly did I have a problem? So what can I do? Optimize the entire experience. In case it's not converted, I will basically try to engage the customer and make the conversion. Stages of the funnel. The conversion funnel typically consists of several stages. Each stage represents a step in the user journey. That's what we were talking about, user behavior. Analyze how users move through these stages. Track where users were, enter the funnel, which stages they progress through, and where they drop off. Did I see a couple of pages and drop off? Did I go to the first page and drop off? Tells me a lot about the user behavior. Pathways. Understand the different pathways user take to navigate the funnel. Some might proceed linearly, while others might skip stages to visit them. Like I saw the product, I took a link directly to the product. I saw the product and I selected right directly the buy now option. I did not check out any other website. So that's one pathway. The other pathway is I went onto the website through the link, saw that product. There were related products, or I checked out what other products are available and maybe then made a sale. Now identifying drop-off points and optimizing the funnel. So drop-off analysis. Identify the stages where users drop off the most. For instance, if there's a high abandonment rate at the checkout stage, it indicates potential use with the checkout process. That means, suppose I clicked on checkout and after that I did not proceed further. Is there a problem with the payment gateway? Am I getting a payment failure? Was a particular payment method not listed? What is the problem that is happening? If it's too many users going till there, then there is a problem. Then we have user experience evaluation, which is analyze the user experience at each stage of the funnel. It is the navigation intuitive? Is it navigation? Are there any technical glitches addressing UX issues that reduce the drop-off? Did I not get the product I wanted? Did I have to navigate too many steps to get to the product, or did I not like it? All of that. Abandonment reason. Use surveys, user feedback, and analytics to understand why users abandon their carts to or exit the funnel. Common reasons include unexpected costs, complicated forms, or concerns about security. It could be the goal or the business objective requires me to fill a form. I basically went onto the form, but I didn't complete it. Why? Maybe it was too long, or maybe there was a problem with the form. A-B testing, test variations of the funnel elements, checkout process, CTAs, payment option, to identify which changes is leading to higher conversion rates. Can I make one change something in the checkout process? change something in the payment option and see what works, what doesn't work. Retargeting. Implement retarget to re-engage the users who have dropped out. Abandoned cart emails or personalized recommendation can entice customers into the funnel. So once you have added products into the cart, if you have entered your personal details, they would send you notifications. Oh, there is a discount. Or you have things that are not in your cart, but you have not bought them. There's a drop in the prices in the cart. Go check it out. We have a new discount and all of that. Simplify checkout. Minimize the number of steps required for the users to complete a purchase. Implement guest checkout options and offer multiple payment methods. This is what we see in all the websites. I don't think I need to explain this. Customer behavior analysis, also a part of the e-commerce analytics we are talking about. So what does customer behavior analysis talk about? Studying how customers interact with your e-commerce platform, including browsing patterns, search behavior, product preferences, and engagement with various elements of the site. What elements am I clicking on? What is least used? Which product is going high, low? We will discuss all of that. Understanding customer behavior helps in personalization, improving user experience, and tailoring marketing strategy to individual preferences. I think so. One of the best websites to do this is Amazon, where everything is personalized. And I think we will talk about that as an example also in this chapter. Is literally all my recommendations come personalized, and there's nothing that... And now it comes in categories where you can choose, oh, you are looking at this category, you want to look at that again. So Amazon is a prime example of utilizing customer. When you visit Amazon, you are presented with personalized recommendations based on your browsing history, previous purchases. They use algorithms to predict what products you might be interested in, enhancing your shopping experience and increasing the likelihood of conversion. They even send you emails based on the kind of products that you're looking for or you have not bought on the website. Personalization and recommendation analysis. Personalization enhances user experience, increases engagement, and drives conversion by offering tailored content and product recommendations. Key analytics assets, user profile. So now we are going to talk about how we can do personalization and recommendation analysis, which is enhancing the entire user experience. User profiles. Create detailed user profile based on demographic and behavioral data. Like we said, we want a holistic view of the customer to be able to give the right recommendation to the right person. Behavior tracking. Monitor user interaction to understand their preferences, their habits, and all of that. I'm more into physical movement or workouts, healthy lifestyle, and I want to put people onto all of that. Recommendation performance. Measure the effectiveness of recommendation algorithm. If you're recommending, what is the conversion rate are you getting? How many people are actually buying the products based on the recommendations and all of that. Then we have conversion impact. Analyze the conversion rate of users who engage with personalized content. What is, again, if I have a personalized content, how much of that is giving me a analysis? Inventory and demand forecasting. Understanding of past events to predict future sales is fundamental to retail and e-commerce operation and optimization. It's very simple. I will need to know what happened in the past to be able to predict the future. So what is demand forecasting? Demand forecasting is the exercise of estimating future sales by measuring pricing, promotion, seasonality, and holiday effect. Not only does it help with inventory planning and negotiation, but it also measures how customers respond to the pricing and promotion efforts to help optimize marketing efforts. Finally, with a deeper understanding of holiday effects, businesses can prevent stockouts from leaving money on the table during crucial times of the year. So demand forecasting, we are going to discuss this in detail, is basically I try to understand that in the future. So in the past, say supposed in the month of December, when we talk November and December is basically a Friday season in US and also in most of the countries, because there are a lot of events happening at that point of time. So at that time, I might want to stock up certain things. There are discounted prices that are available. So I will also want to ensure that I have more inventory than normal, because the past told me that certain inventory or certain products were stocked out at that point of time, and if I'm expecting a heavy sales, I will stock up those products or the inventory. So there are two parts, obviously, demand and forecasting. What is demand? Demand is a quantity of a goods that consumers are willing to pay at various prices during a given period. Broadly speaking, demand is what people want. So if you take an example, which is at its current price, Mahindra SUV 700, when booking started, had a wait period of 11 months. And it was forecast to sell over 10th one sorry 10,000 units in the next 6 months. If they were to raise the production by then, the wait period would reduce significantly and the units sold would also increase correspondingly. When I know there is a demand, I want to meet it with a relevant supply. So it could be a chance that when if some SUV 700 has 11 months waiting period, I might go for another car. Why wait 11 months? Certain people might not want to wait. So, and also they might agree to wait 5.5, 4 months, or if I depending on how I increase the production, I can accordingly meet the demand. Forecasting, on the other hand, is the exercise of estimating the future outcome of events in a given period. The real demand for something is unknowable because you can't survey anyone. Secondly, demand usually lags supply. If you only had 500 t-shirts to sell and you sold out within 120 minutes, how do you truly know how much demand is there? Nevertheless, demand forecasting remains a powerful tool to help e-commerce stores understand customer behavior around prices, promotion, and how much to plan for when there's a Black Friday or a Cyber Monday that comes around. So forecasting will help me. Even if a product sells out in like 120 minutes, I can at least maybe not compensate for that, but ahead I can go and have enough of the supply. Needs for demand forecasting and factors impacting it. So demand forecasting typically involves statistical or machine learning models to explain the effects of pricing, promotionality, seasonality, and holiday as they relate to sales. Price effects are measured by price elasticity, which is the ratio of the change in unit volume relative to a change in price. If we drive the price of a product by 20% and the volume by increase by more than 20%, then the ratio is greater than one, and we can say the product is elastic. So I am basically checking what is the impact of price on my product. So, like I said, if I drop, maybe I have a product and I drop all of a sudden drop the price by 20%, and the sale of that product increases by 25-50%. That means it is affected and the price is elastic. If the ratio is less than none, then we call it as inelastic. Most consumer products are elastic. Example would be a toilet paper. People tend to buy more of it when it is on sale. Conversely, most prescription drugs are inelastic. An example would be insulin, where people with diabetes have to buy it regardless of the price. So certain products are dependent on the price and maybe certain conditions, otherwise it is elastic. Promotion effects and seasonality effects. Promotion effects are measuring the change in sales volume related to the levels of promotion. 10% off, 20% off, or different types of advertisement like buy one get one free or free shipping offers. Does it increase the number of sales? What is the promotion? How the promotion is affecting? Do I continue this? Do I launch a maybe a membership or a loyalty program? Seasonality effects are the cyclic movements in the sales volume that occurs throughout the year and usually measured in weeks or months and sometimes days. These cycles typically reflect spending behavior related to a person, people's wallet. You might notice higher sales at the beginning of the month, and when people have more disposable cash, followed by reduced sales towards the end of the month when bills are due. Or it could be as simple as saying beginning of the month is when people get their salaries, and end of the month is when they also run out of their salaries. Holiday effects. Holiday effects usually take shape in a sharp increase in the sales volume over a short period, Christmas, Diwali, end of season sale. Not only do most stores have promotions planned around these times, but consumers are also expecting to take advantage of these sales are in a buying mindset. It's essential to measure the effects mentioned above in coordination to be able to tell what is driving the change. So if you notice, most of the time on Amazon, you have this Great Indian Festival sale, which will come around the Diwali season or the end of the year, in the third or fourth quarter, as you call it. So, and people wait for the sale to move, make most of their purchases because the prices do go down very drastically during that time. That means I have saved up and made up my mind that I'm going to buy during the promotion that is upcoming. And you'll often see, well in advance, alerts are being pushed out saying that this is coming and this is the day on Prime members will get it earlier. So people want to join, take up the Prime membership. Inventory forecasting. Essential data elements required for accurate inventory, for including current inventory level, outstanding purchases order, which purchase orders have not been completed, historical trend lines, forecast period requirements, expected demand and seasonality, maximum possible stock levels, sales trends and velocity, customer response to specific products. So, what is my current inventory levels? What are the outstanding orders? I would want to combine my outstanding orders with deduct my from the order that is going out. So, suppose I have 100 outstanding orders for a product and I send out only 100 stock, that means I'm going to get stocked out again. The rest of them are pretty simple what we've spoken about. Inventory management changes. So, what do I do in inventory management? Firstly, managing the space. The most obvious place is the warehouse, where a lot of inventory lives and it's constantly changing and in motion. Inventory management in a warehouse is a labor-intensive and complex undertaking involving steps as receiving, put away, picking, packing, and shipping. The challenge comes from performing each of these tasks as efficiently as possible. Meanwhile, simply managing the warehouse space itself is challenging. So please understand, if something like Amazon, which has a huge product list and storing the right products in the right racks at the right shelves, knowing where they are stored, picking it up, packaging and shipping the right product to the customer becomes very, very important. Obsolete inventory, known as excess or dead stock, dead inventory. Obsolete inventory is a stock of the business, is a stock a business doesn't believe it can sell, use or sell due to lack of demand. Absolute inventory can negatively impact a company's overall financial health. Absolute inventory is products that have either been bought by the company or there is a raw material cost that is involved with building that item, and when you have to sell it, that means basically you are now dealing with stock or money, loss of money that has gone into that inventory. High inventory carrying cost. Inventory carrying cost arise from keeping products shelved at a warehouse, distribution center or store, and includes storage, labor, transportation, handling, insurance, taxes, item replacement and shrinkage or depreciation. These costs often represent 20% of the total or 30% of the total inventory value, and the number increases the longer the products are held. That means they are there and they are not, a thing is happening to them. Write-downs. An inventory write-down is an accounting process that's triggered when inventory decreases in value but does not lose its value completely. When the fair market value of inventory drops below its book value, a general inventory is made and an inventory write-down reduces the value of the ending inventory for the reporting period, which has both implications on the income statement and the balance sheet. Very simple. That means, suppose there is this product, and this mostly happens when you have dead stock. To take out the dead stock, you might decide to write down the value. That means purchase, let me give it off. At least it is not completely it is negative, but at least a lesser negative margin and a little, no profits definitely come out, but the loss decreases.